Please stand by. Good day and welcome to the National Employment Network Payments Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Adele Barr. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Evan. And thank you, everyone, for joining us this afternoon, this fine fall day. Again, welcome to the quarterly All EM Payments Call. And basically, I am on the line right now just to talk a little bit about our platform that we're currently using. So if we go to the next slide, you'll see that we moved on to the ReadyTalk platform, same company that you use to dial in for the audio portion. We've now switched over for the visual portion. So here, just to give you a few tips on how to use it if you don't already know how to navigate through ReadyTalk. ReadyTalk provides the options to bring the presentation into full screen mode. And by pressing this button that you see here towards the right, you'll have the opportunity to go into full screen. Just make sure that you don't press that button to the right of it where you see it's the exit conference button, or else you'll have to come back in. But again, if you want to go into full screen mode, just click on the little full screen button that you see there at the top. Next slide, please. Okay, so here, ReadyTalk does give an opportunity to raise your hand, but we'll ask that you go ahead and disregard the raise hand button during the all call events. We don't actually use the feature during the presentation. What you can do instead is you can always, of course, press 1 on your phone during the Q&A segments of the call, or you can also ask your questions directly in the chat at any time during the call. And if by chance you accidentally press that raise hand button, don't worry about it. You can either press it again to lower that hand, or the TPM administrator will go ahead and lower the participant hand manually throughout the call. So no worries. Okay, next slide. So the chat. So ReadyTalk actually hides the chat by default so that you can actually see that full presentation in its larger form. So all you would have to do is you press chat with everyone button down here in the lower left-hand side, and then you can chat, and the participant list side panel will come up, as we'll show you in the next slide. All right, so once you've clicked on chat with everyone, you can then click the group chat, which you see up towards the top that's underlined right there at the top side of the panel, to switch the participant's view to the chat view. So now you should be able to type your message in the text box at the bottom of that side panel. And, of course, optionally, you can, pressing the left-facing arrow in the top left corner, will hide the chat panel if you just want to go ahead and view the presentation in its full screen size. Next slide. Okay, let me see. Let's make sure that everyone is able to do the chat. So if you want, you can go ahead and type in a few things in the chat, make sure that that's working for you. All right. Very good. I see everyone's doing a few things. All right. So I won't take up too much time. I'm not all that important here. What is important is that you're here, and you're here for the All EM Payments call. And I'll go ahead and hand that over to Kimberly Cutler, our payments manager. Kimberly?
Hi. Thank you, Adele. And thank you all again for attending the All EM Payments call today, Tuesday, October the 30th. The remainder of the call, as Adele has focused on or mentioned, will focus on the EM payments process. So we're going to provide insight into the payments process. But I would first like to reiterate the announcement that was sent out to providers on Thursday, October the 18th, with changes to employment network overpayment recoupment. Again, this is a message that was sent out to all providers on Thursday, October the 18th. And effective November the 1st, so just in a couple of days, the Social Security Administration will no longer accept checks as repayment for employment network overpayments. EANs will have 10 days to dispute any overpayments. After that time, SSA will initiate payment recovery using first pending evidentiary payment from the named ticket holder or ticket holders, and second, from any other ticket holders assigned to the EN where payments may be due until SSA recoups all overpaid funds. ENs with a current repayment agreement will continue to have their payments withheld according to that agreement. However, checks will not be accepted as a form of repayment. And please note that any unresolved EN overpayments may result in the termination of your ticket program agreement with SSA. If you should have any questions, please contact Janice Edwards at ttw.payment.support@ssa.gov. Okay. Now, during this presentation, we will provide information on the following agenda topics: Phase 1 milestone relationship requirements, certification of services or costs, the cost statement form, and we will also provide ticket program available resources, and then at the end, we will also have time for questions and answers. We will go ahead and move on with our first agenda topic, which is the Phase 1 Milestone Relationship Requirement, or PMRR. Effective August 1st, 2018, Social Security implemented a new policy. In order to receive a Phase 1 milestone payment, ENs must submit proof of a relationship in addition to meeting all other payment requirements. If an EN cannot provide sufficient proof of a relationship by submitting the required documentation, the ticket will be unassigned from the EN. Continuing with the Phase 1 milestone relationship requirement on the next slide, ENs should not request a Phase 1 milestone payment without having proof of earnings and proof of a relationship readily available. Both proof of earnings and proof of relationship must cover the entire Phase 1 milestone period, and that includes, you know, 1 month for Phase 1 milestone 1, 3 months for Phase 1 milestone 2 payment, 6 months for Phase 1 milestone 3, and 9 months for Phase 1 milestone 4. So it is very important to note here when you are requesting a Phase 1 milestone 1 payment, that you must provide proof of earnings and proof of relationship to cover that entire milestone period. And the examples that I just read are the requirements needed for each payment. On the next slide, for Phase 1 milestone relationship requirement, please refer to the chart below to see all acceptable forms of evidence for proof of earnings and proof of relationship requirements. So as you can see here on the chart, on the left-hand side, we have what we accept as acceptable proof of earnings. And that information has not changed. So the proof of earnings, that rule or policy has not changed. But what we added was if or when submitting the type of evidence on the left side of the chart. On the right side of the chart, we're explaining to you or showing to you what required proof of relationship you will need. So if you're submitting the pay stubs for your request, then you do not need to submit any additional information for proof of relationship. So pay stubs are a standalone. Pay stubs provide proof of earnings and proof of relationship. If you are submitting evidence of earnings through the work number, employer prepared earnings statement, or you get the message when you're submitting your case through the portal, you get the message earnings already established in SSA system, then you must submit pay stubs or certification of services. Because, of course, you have your proof of earnings through those documents, but you still would be required for proof of relationship, which would need to come in the form of a pay stub or your cost. One may ask, what is proof of a relationship? Proof of a relationship can be either pay stubs or documentation of intensive employment support services and monthly contact with beneficiaries during Phase 1 milestone period. ENs must document all services, including dates ENs provided services to the beneficiary during the entire period of the claim using the COS form. Phase one milestones require monthly contact with the beneficiary. Quarterly contact does not show proof of a relationship. If an EN is unable to establish proof of relationship at any point during the phase one milestone period, the ticket will be unassigned from the EN. On the next slide, what we've provided is a scenario, and we want to go ahead and just walk through this scenario together. So an EN submits two claims based on the portal message, earnings already established. So they're asking for phase one milestone one for claim month July 2017, phase one milestone two for claim month September 2017. There are 3 months of earnings to satisfy the earnings requirement. So we have the earnings requirement. Phase one milestone one requires 1 month of earnings, which we know is July 2017, and phase one milestone two requires 2 additional months of earnings. And there you have August 2017 and September 2017. The EN is required to provide proof of a relationship for all 3 months, July, August, and September of 2017, by submitting pay stubs or documentation with date and a list of detailed services provided. So, again, this is a scenario where the EN is, you know, you're submitting a case through the portal, and you receive that message, earnings already proven, so or established. So we have proof of earnings. Now it is the responsibility of the provider or the EN to provide proof of relationship. So, of course, pay stubs are preferred. And if you have pay stubs, as remember as a few slides back, we mentioned that pay stubs are standalone because pay stubs provide proof of earnings and proof of relationship. So the EN would need to submit pay stubs or submit the certification of services with date and a list of the services provided. And we need to make sure that you're detailed in those services. So we didn't just stop there. We have a scenario number two. So in this case, payments already made to the EN prior to the implementation of the phase one milestone relationship requirement. The EN received a phase one milestone one for claim month February 2018 based on earnings submitted from the work number. The EN received phase one milestone two for claim month April 2018 based on earnings from the work number also. The EN now submits a claim for phase one milestone three for claim month July 2018 and includes pay stubs for May, June, and July. The earnings requirement for phase one milestone three is 6 months within 12 months. There are 6 months of trial work level or TWL earnings in the system to satisfy the earnings requirement, but only 3 months of pay stubs. And that was from May through July is what the EN submitted. So we only have 3 months of pay stubs to satisfy the phase one milestone requirement or relationship requirement. And so, again, looking at this scenario, phase one milestone one and two were paid from the work number. And, again, going back to the chart a few slides back, if you submit earnings based on the work number, you must submit proof of relationship. So, in this case, the EN is required to provide proof of relationship for January through April 2018 by submitting pay stubs or documentation with date and a list of detailed services provided during the milestone period. And one of the reasons we wanted to include this scenario is because we do understand that there are payments that ENs have received prior to the August 1st effective date of providing proof of relationship. But since that change and since that information or that policy was implemented, any previous payments that you will receive for claim months that will be included to satisfy an additional claim, you must have proof of relationship. So in this case, phase one milestone one and phase one milestone two were paid from the work number, and that is why we're asking you to now provide proof of relationship for those months. Here we have a handy flow chart that hopefully will connect everything that I was just going over with the different scenarios. So you'll see here at the top of the flow chart, Ian selects a claim month for phase one milestone via the ticket portal. And then we go and we're asking, are sufficient earnings in SSA system? If yes, and we're looking to the left of that, if yes, Ian submits evidence of a relationship, either a pay stub or a cost, because earnings already established in the system, that is an earnings requirement, but you still must satisfy the proof of relationship. If are sufficient earnings in SA systems, and the answer to the right, and you have no, the EN submits evidence of earnings. If the evidence of earnings that the EN submitted are pay stubs, looking to your left where it says yes, then an EN has satisfied both the earnings and relationship requirements because pay stubs are standalone. Does the EN submit a pay stub? No. Then EN submits a cost to satisfy the relationship requirement. So in the scenario where we're asking, does the EN submit a pay stub and we say no, then the EN is submitting at this point either the employee prepared earnings statement or the work number. So we have to have proof of relationship. So they would need to submit a cost. And once we have the proof of relationship and we have the proof of earnings, then the payment can be processed because the EN has now satisfied both of the requirements. Okay. Now, the next portion of the presentation, we're going to cover certification of services because we talk about providing proof of relationship and that you must provide certification of services. So we're going to, next few slides, we're going to go into that information. And one may ask, what are certification of services? Certification of services, documentation of services provided to ticket holders. EANs must submit a detailed list of services provided to ticket holders for three purposes. One, for annual services and supports review. Two, when providing proof of relationship for phase one milestone payments in lieu of pay stubs. Three, requesting payment after ticket holder unassigned ticket. And I just want to make sure to provide clarification on number two, where it states providing proof of relationship for phase one milestone payments in lieu of pay stubs. The certification of services does not replace, or you have to make sure that you have the earnings. So I don't want individuals to think that, oh, I don't have a pay stub, I don't have earnings, I just have to submit a certification of services. You must have evidence of earnings first. Okay, the next slide, what we provided here is, it's a chart that provides information on when and how to submit a cost for payment request versus services and supports reviews. Now, these are some of the questions we received on previous calls. There was some confusion about because you have to submit a certification of services for certain payment requests, and you also have to submit certification of services for your services and supports review. So this chart actually helps provide when and how to submit it. So question, starting on the left-hand of the chart, when do you submit the cost? For EN payments, is to provide proof of a relationship for phase one milestone payments in lieu of pay stubs and when requesting payment for a ticket that was unassigned by the ticket holder. So that's when you would submit a cost for payment. And what I will do is, because this is the payments call, I'm going to focus on when you submit it for payments. And at your leisure, you can actually see when you would submit it for services and supports review. So, again, I'm looking under the question column and focusing on EN payments. So how do you submit the cost? You would fax number listed on the ticket portal generated fax cover sheet. So when you go in and you submit your payment request, then there is a fax cover sheet that is generated, and so you would use that. If for some reason you have to submit your request manually, there are some instances when you have to, then you would just fax your certification of services to the fax number provided there. And what time period should my cost cover? It should cover all the months required to cover the milestone period or period that is requested for an unassigned ticket. So you want to make sure that you're covering that time, that period of time. You want to be clear with that when you're submitting your request. What should you include with the cost? You should include date and detailed description of services provided to the ticket holder during the period. And you want to make sure that you provide contact date and types during the phase one milestone period. So you don't want to just send in dates of just random dates. You want to make sure that there is a detailed service listed with the dates that you are sending in when you submit your request. Now, the next slide provides examples of acceptable services for employment support. Of course, these are just examples and does not include all of the services that one may provide to a beneficiary. But again, the intent of this, of the next couple of slides, is to just provide some examples. And some services you have here, career counseling, job accommodations, job training and coaches, and to the right, you'll be able to see a description, and I'll just read one. So for a service of career counseling, a description for that, Ian must provide one-on-one sessions to assess the beneficiary's skills and educational background to find jobs or trades for which they are qualified. This includes at least 1 hour of career counseling and guidance. Again, so this is just to provide some acceptable services for employment support. That list and those examples are continued on the next slide. And you'll be able to see an example of a service would be job placement assistance, ongoing employment support. So, again, what we wanted to just share here are some acceptable services for employment support. Now that we've talked about certification of services and examples of what type of services are acceptable and when you should submit certification of services to show proof of relationship, the next couple of slides we're going to focus on the certification of services or the COS statement form. The first example that we're going to go over on the next three slides, it's an example of what a passing COS looks like. So what we wanted to show was as when you submit for proof of relationship, so when you submit this required COS form, this is the information when we're reviewing it and doing an assessment, the information on the next couple pages will show you what would cause a COS to pass. So here you have the first part of the form. Of course, this information must be filled out by the EN, and you have your EN name and your DUNS and all the information there. You must provide the ticket holder's name, Social Security number, ticket assignment date you want to have there. If the ticket unassignment date applies, then you want to submit that information as well. Now, looking at the next slide, here we have where we're asking, please list all services that your EN provided, include date to the ticket holder to date. Now, if you're looking here, this is what we are looking for when you're establishing proof of relationship or you're showing proof of relationship. As you can see, the EN documented dates of services, and they provided a detailed description of the services. And it doesn't have to be a lot of information. We just need to see the date that the service was provided and at least a detailed list. An example here, on February 27th, 2018, they developed the IWP. March 9th, met with clients to complete resume and job search skills. Things that stand out here is a service, resume and job search skills. The next month, spoke with client regarding job search. What stands out here is the service is job search. So, again, this is just what we look for because it's filled out appropriately by providing dates with detailed list of services. The next slide is the example of the last page of the form. So, of course, the form must be signed. Want to make sure that when you're using this form, and as I stated earlier, you must submit this form. It is required. ENs cannot develop their own form. That is not acceptable. So when you're completing this form, you will need to make sure that it is signed. And that was an example of what a COS form would look like that would pass an assessment because, again, the dates of service along with the list of services were provided. The next couple of slides provide an example of a cost that failed review. Here on the first page as before, all the information is filled out, so that's correct. The next slide where we're asking the EN to list all the services that they provided, here you'll see what we have is they have the date, but then the services, from this we cannot pull out what services were provided. They have a date of May 27th when they developed the IWP, and then on June 9th, they left a voicemail. On August 1st, they left a voicemail. On September 15th, they called the client. So from here, we cannot determine what, if any, services were provided to the beneficiary during this time. This is why it's very important to just list out a detailed description of the services that you provided. An example, September 15, 2018, they put what we have listed here is called client. What would have been sufficient is called client and spoke with them about the revised resume. Called client to provide job leads in the area. That's more detail, and it gives us a snapshot of the services that were provided. And again, the last page is the page for the signature of the beneficiary. So basically the reason why the EN would have failed this review is because of the lack of the detail of services provided. What we wanted to cover here is we wanted to go over some frequently asked questions that we were able to capture in previous calls, so we just wanted to kind of point out some because you may have the same question, so we'll just cover a few of these. So, question, can I use the same cost form for all Phase 1 milestones? Answer, yes, as long as the cost provides evidence of a relationship for each month of the payment being requested. You must submit a cost with each Phase 1 milestone payment request, even if it's the same one used before with the correct month documented. This goes back to your making sure that your certification of services, your range, covers all of the months requested. And, again, an example. So if you're asking for a Phase 1 Milestone 1, when you submit your certification of services, you may only provide that range, may only cover that particular month. But when you're asking for a Phase 1 Milestone 2, 3, or 4, then that requires more months of services, proof of relationship. So then you would have to submit your request with each payment, making sure that the certification of services will include that milestone range. Next question, how should EN submit Phase 1 request? Answer, EN's must submit Phase 1 milestone payment request via the ticket portal. In some instances, Phase 1 milestone payment request must be submitted manually. And an example of when you must submit a payment request manually is the portal will not accept the claim once submitted. And you must attempt to go through the portal first. But again, if you're unable to submit the request, then you would submit it manually. Next question. Are there any changes to the acceptable forms of primary evidence for payment? And the answer is no. EANs can still submit pay stubs, employer-prepared earnings statement, or the work number if earnings are not already in SSA systems. So that particular policy did not change. They are still acceptable as forms of earnings. Question, if the ticket portal shows earnings already proven, can we continue to request the payment without submitting a pay stub? The answer is EN's requesting Phase 2 milestone and outcome payments do not need to submit a pay stub. EN's requesting Phase 1 milestone payments must submit either a pay stub or a cost as proof of relationship, even with earnings proven on SSA system. So, again, if you're requesting a Phase 2 milestone and or outcome payment, then you're not required to show proof of relationship. And if the earnings are already proven in the system, you can submit for payment. And, of course, if all other payment criteria is met, then we will process that payment. But the proof of relationship is for Phase 1 milestones. So even if you get the message the earnings are already proven, then you would need to submit pay stubs or certification of services. Next question. If we can submit a cost instead of pay-stubs, how would we know when they actually meet the trial work level for a particular month? Question, a cost is not a form of primary earnings evidence. A cost cannot be submitted in lieu of pay-stubs. So, again, you're only submitting a cost after the earnings have been established. Again, if it's a pay stub, then that's fine, then it's a standalone. But anytime you're submitting for payment and your primary earnings or the earnings that you're using requesting the payment are the work number, employee prepared earnings statement, or earnings already proven in the system, then you must submit certification of services. Okay. Last two questions. What happens if an EN submits the phase one milestone for the wrong attainment month? And the answer for that, TPM will adjust the claim month to ensure the milestones are evaluated for the correct attainment month. The payment request for incorrect claim month will be denied, and TPM will create a payment request for the correct month and diary the case. And EN will have 30 days to provide pay stubs or costs for the correct month. And the reason the case is being diarized is to give you that 30 days to provide proof of relationship. So we will deny it, the requested claim month, and we will reach out and give you the opportunity to provide proof of relationship via pay stubs or costs for the correct attainment month. Question, if TPM unassigns a ticket due to a failed cost determination and the beneficiary requests that the same EN reassign his or her ticket, what happens with the phase one milestones since the EN previously failed the cost determination? The answer for that, if the ticket holder is reassigned to the same EN and the EN is able to submit proof of a relationship with the phase one milestone payment, the EN is allowed to receive the payment. So that was a list of the frequently asked questions that we wanted to cover with you today, because, again, you may have those same questions, and we just kind of want to touch base on that. What we have on our next slide are the resources for TPM. I've mentioned throughout this presentation certification of services and the COS form. Here you'll see where you can actually go locate the form for use. And remember, when you're submitting certification of services, the form that's located here at this link will be required. EN developed forms are not acceptable, so please make sure you're using this form. We do have our phone line here for Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And you see there you have your toll-free number. And if you're calling for the payments help desk, then you have option one. And to reach the systems help desk, option two. We also have provided here as a resource for any payment issues that you have. Please feel free to email the EN Payments Help Desk at yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. And for questions and issues related to ticket assignment, the service provider website and the ticket portal any issues with that, you would contact EN Systems Help at yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. I kind of stumbled over that one a minute, so let me read that to you again. For questions and issues related to ticket assignments, the service provider website, and the ticket portal, you will contact EN Systems Help at yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. And those are just a few of the resources that are available to you. Okay. So I know that was a lot of information that we covered. So at this time, what we will do is open the lines for questions. So, Evan, if you would open the line up for questions, but I would like to first see if we have any questions in the chat. Hi, Evan.
If you'd like to ask a question, that is star one on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that's star one for any questions. We'll pause for a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for a question.
Okay. And Evan, while we're waiting for someone to signal for a question, I would like to ask John. John, do we have any questions in the chat?
Yes, I'm going through the process of just collecting and cleaning up all of the questions. So if you want to take a question from the phone line first.
Okay, that will work.
Our first question comes from Deborah Ruffin. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. I missed slide 4 where you were saying something about with the EN being denied or something. Could you go over slide 4 again for me?
Okay, I'm sorry. Which?
The effective, yeah. I think this was before the, because I'm taking notes for, you were saying something about the relationship requirement.
Right.
I think this is
so,
it. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So effective August 1st, Social Security implemented a new policy. So in order to receive a Phase 1 milestone payment, ENs must submit proof of a relationship in addition to meeting all other payment requirements. And if an EN cannot provide sufficient proof of a relationship by submitting the required documentation, the ticket will be unassigned. Was that the information you were looking for?
Yes, yes. I just wanted to make sure what you were saying. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Next question comes from Stacy Clark. Please go ahead.
Okay. Hi, Stacy.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great. I have a question, and John can take it off. I typed it into the chat room as well. This is a very, I don't know if other ENs are having this problem, but I would say 95% of my beneficiaries that I'm helping no longer receive what is an old-fashioned pay stub. What they do send me, and this, the only thing the employer sends them, at the top, I think it's called, and I have many examples in my clients' folders, you know, they're produced by ADP or whatever, and they're called employment statements, something like that. They're not called pay stubs because they get direct deposit, every single one of my beneficiaries, and they get these statements mailed to them to show what went in, and it does break down the taxes and all of that, but it's not really a quote-unquote pay stub. So I'm kind of just wanting to clarify, does that count as a sufficient pay stub, even though it's not called that? It's called employer statement or all those terms that you're using. I just want to, you know, get your take on that.
Well, most of the statements that look like a pay stub from ADP do have
– yes.
The ticket holder's name, it's got their hours, their wages, the taxes
yes.
in and out. So they look like a pay stub. They may not be called a
yes.
pay stub, but they have all of the same in information that a pay stub would have. So, yes, we do accept those.
Yeah, and that's what I'm trying to clarify. I've talked to the payments helpline about this, and there's been a little confusion because I did. That's what I get from my clients, you know, and they're called earnings statements and different things like that, but they look like a real pay stub, which is exactly what you're saying. It has a company name. It has the client's name. It has the pay period beginning and end, and it has the hours and the taxes. I guess what's deceiving is some of the payments people – I guess – so when I do it on the portal, I need to always select pay stub on that, right? If that's what it looks like.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
And
yes.
So an employee, and I'm trying to differentiate, so I'll know, between an employment in generated and earning statement, which is what it says on the top. So I get confused because this is what they get from their employee. So what would be that? What would be on an employer generated statement? Would it not look like a pay stub?
Well, the employer prepared statement is an actual form that you can get off our website that you list the hours, the wages, the gross earnings, taxes, and it's signed by the representative from the employer.
Okay, you completely. answered my question. Thank you. See, I just am, you know, caught up on the earnings statement and everything that I'm. So it sounds like whatever my client's giving me is what their company's giving me. It looks like a pay stub, and I'm going to check pay stub on the portal. Okay, I totally get it now. Thank you.
Certainly.
A reminder, star one for any questions. Our next question comes from Lurleen Currington. Please go ahead.
The question that I have has to do with pay stubs, and I'm piggybacking on the person that was just on. Today I receive pay stubs, but they don't look like pay stubs. There's nothing on them to indicate that they're pay stubs, and for large amounts of money. The person is a truck driver, and what I'm not understanding, and I explained it to the individual, there's nothing on here to indicate to me that these are pay stubs, because he didn't sign any tax forms. They don't take out FICA. It doesn't show a start and end date. It doesn't show a gross. It doesn't show a net. It just shows the dollar amount. However, in the bottom, the check account, it will say like it's for a refund, and the type of check, it says like a bill. And I've got four of these, and I don't know what to do with it.
Hi. So this is Kimberly. So based on the information you just described, that looks like for your beneficiary is self-employed, so it's a contractor.
He's not self-employed. He worked for this company before he had his stroke, and they called him after 7 years to come back. And so he's literally working for them.
Right, so he's a contractor. I'm sorry. So he's a contractor. So the information that you have, you're correct, is not a pay stub.
Okay.
And the way to tell is are they taking taxes out? FICA,
no.
Medicaid. Right. So
no.
What?
No.
So it. What it sounds as if the truck driver in this case is employed by the trucking firm, but he is a contractor, meaning he or she is supposed to report their earnings. And it's treated like a self-employment case, which means until the person pays their taxes, either each quarter or most of the time at the end of the year, you would not be able to submit for payment till his taxes are paid and the information gets from IRS to SSA to them putting it in their system.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Evan, really quick. John, do you have any questions, or you want us to give you a few more minutes?
Yeah, we've got a large list of questions, so I'm going to start going through from the very beginning. The first question we had was actually asked when slide 7 was presented, and that slide 1, and that slide's up right now. Stacey Clark asks, if I didn't get the email, how can I get a copy of these changes?
Okay, I think you should be able to go. Right. I think you should be able to go on the website under the Ticket to Work website under announcements.
All right. And let's move on to our next question then. Claire Oliver asks, can we get some sort of standardized report that tells us, one, the name of the ticket holder, two, the amount recouped, three, where the overpayment will be taken from, and four, date of when the overpayment will be taken from, and five, reasons for overpayment and recouping of payment?
What I would suggest is for any questions regarding the overpayment that they would contact Janice Edwards at ttw.payment.support@ssa.gov. She'll be able to provide information, but just also, if there is an overpayment, Janice will contact you, and that information will be provided, the Social Security number, the name, name of the beneficiary, what the overpayment was, and with what, how the next steps for recoupment. But any questions, I would suggest that you reach out to ttw.payment.support@ssa.gov.
Kimberly, this is Kara from Social Security. There's been changes for overpayments, and all the ENs were notified about that effective November 1st. They will get the information on which case number that the overpayment is for. We are no longer sending names or Social Security numbers, so therefore the file will not need to be encrypted since there won't be any PII. The EN will have 10 days if they have evidence to the contrary of what is sent to them. After that, we will start recouping payments from future payments and not necessarily from the beneficiary that was overpaid. That SSA needs to, for our accounting purposes, recoup the payments.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, and our next question comes from Diana Bernardini, who asks, could you repeat the part where if we do not provide proof of a relationship, the ticket will be unassigned? And then Teresa also asked, who's the one that will be disassigning, and when will the EN be notified?
Okay, as far as the information about the ticket being unassigned, I think that's up on the slide right now, where if an EN cannot provide sufficient proof of relationship by submitting the required documentation. In that case, if the EN is unable to provide proof of relationship, the case will be reviewed and the ticket and a decision will be made if the ticket will be unassigned, and that will be unassigned by TPM. And I just wanted to note that there will be, for as far as the ticket being unassigned, there will be outreach made, there will be attempts for the EN to provide proof of relationship. It's just that if they are unable to do so after, we outreach and let them know exactly what's missing, or if they do not submit it, then at that time is when a decision will be made to unassign the ticket.
All right. And that's perfect. That actually answers half of the next question. Will we be warned before a ticket is unassigned? The other half is, can we challenge it, i.e. submit additional documents to provide proof of relationship?
Well, let me address the first part. I think they said, will they be warned before the ticket is unassigned? I'm going to answer no, if someone from SSA may provide clarity on that. But the ticket will be, for example, so if you cannot provide proof of relationship, of course, the case will be denied. So there will be a denied reason. And like I said, then a decision will be made that the ticket will be unassigned. There will be information sent after that, I think, but I don't know that we will send any type of, or there will be information sent notifying you that there's going to be an unassignment. I would just strongly suggest that when you're submitting for Phase 1 Milestone 1 and you do not have pay stubs to provide proof of earnings and proof of relationship, that you provide certification of services within a timely manner and making sure that it has the date of the services provided with a detailed description of those. And, again, to help prevent having a ticket unassigned, when you are requesting a Phase 1 Milestone 1 through 4 through the portal, again, it is not based on pay stubs, please, at the time you're submitting your request, submit your certification of services.
All right. And then our next question comes from Wendy Swearing, who asks, why do we need to provide intensive employment if the individuals are working?
I will let someone from SSA have a shot and give them a chance to answer.
Yes. It's not that we're saying you have to provide intensive services while they are employed, but we are asking you to check up on your ticket holder at least quarterly because you don't, this is a person who is deemed disabled by Social Security, and you don't know if they may require more services, they may stop working at any point, that's just the responsibility of the EN is to keep up with their ticket holder.
Kara, this is Deborah. Did you mean monthly? They should perform that
Are you talking about the phase ones? I apologize. Yeah, if it's during the phase ones, it should be monthly. And especially during that phase one period because they just started their job. It's not like they've been working for 3 or 4 years. And many times we found that people don't continue in employment in that first year when they're disabled. Thanks, Deb.
All right. And we've actually had several questions of confusion about the quarterly versus monthly contacts. In particular, people have been asking if they had received a phase one milestone for July 2017 and a phase one milestone for November of 2017. And at that time, the requirement was quarterly contacts. Are they going to be required to prove monthly contact? And if so, how? Because they were originally only required to provide quarterly contacts.
Okay, so this is Kimberly. So again, since this went into effect August 1st, right, and we do understand, and one of the scenarios actually covered for some payments that the beneficiary received prior to the effective date of the change. And so at this point, yes, we would expect the ENs to provide proof of relationship, and I completely understand they're saying it used to be quarterly contact, but now we're asking that they provide monthly contact. But just remember also, that's not the only thing that we look at. We do look at the services that were provided during that range. So I would just suggest that, again, when you're sending in certification of services, that you're very detailed in what you did provide. So, again, if you were only providing quarterly contact before the requirement, then we just need to see that the detailed list of services of what was being provided during that time. And we will perform an assessment of the information that you send in.
All right. I think that kind of clarifies that a little bit. Our next question comes from Kathy Holmquist, who asks, what are the relationship requirements for sending someone to school prior to returning to work?
That this is Kimberly. So when after the ticket is assigned and you assist in someone going back to school, that is a service. That is a service that you're being provided, that you're providing to the ticket holder. So again, when we provided on a few slides back, when we provided examples of acceptable services, that was not all inclusive, of course. So again, just be detailed with the list of services that you did provide to the beneficiary. And if assisting them in going back to school, make sure you're detailed in what that included or what that entailed, along with any other services that you provided prior to employment and
okay. Right. This is Deborah Kimberly. For that question, we just want to make sure that you're not talking about training prior to them getting any type of employment. If there is training during, let's say that you're requesting a phase one milestone and there was some training during that period, of course, that would be a service that you provided for that particular month. But the point we want to make is for those months, those attainment months that you're requesting phase one milestone payments, the services have to be for those months.
Right, okay.
All right. Thanks for the clarification, Deborah. Our next question comes from Shelley Paquette, who asks, if individual reports that earnings have been submitted to SSA, how within the portal are we able to determine that has occurred and identify which months to request? Are earnings noted within the portal records?
Okay, I'm sorry, John. Could you repeat the question?
Yeah. If an individual reports that earnings have been submitted to SSA, how within the ticket portal are we able to determine that has occurred and to identify which months to request? Are earnings noted within the portal records?
Yes. Once the earnings have been submitted and the information has been posted to SSA's database, then yes, when the EN submits for a payment request, then that's when they would get the message, I think, earnings already established, because now we have the information, or we have earnings information in the system. Now, I'm not going to say that information is always from, pay stubs or whatever they submitted, but if you will get the message, earnings already established, and that could be an indication that the earnings have been reported and entered into the system.
And for the question as far as how would you know which months that are in the system, if you're making a request for a phase one milestone, again, during that initial period where the beneficiary goes back to work, if you're in contact with the beneficiary, you will have an idea of whether or not they were working and what their earnings were for a particular period, so you could submit your request for a particular attainment month. And sometimes it may be off a little bit, and, for the month that you submit, there may not be in there. But if you're working for phase one milestone payments, for the trial work period, you should have an idea of what month the beneficiary is working. That's why we have this proof of relationship for you to stay in contact with the beneficiary.
Thank you, Ms. Tennessee. And John, I know you have a few questions you said, but I would like to give the individuals on the phone opportunity to answer or ask a few questions as well. So, Evan, do we have any questions in the queue at this point?
Yes, we do. Our next question comes from Sabrina Stamps. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hello, Ms. Sabrina.
We're here. Sabrina, are you there, ma'am?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay. All right. Then good afternoon, everyone.
Hi.
I am. I want to address what I think is the elephant in the room, and I haven't heard anything. I know it was not on the agenda. Is ePay totally gone now, or what? So what's going on with that?
This is Karen.
Can I hear giggles? Oh, okay, I couldn't hear.
This is Social Security. No, ePay is not gone. Right now we are in the process of assessing each EN and determining the eligibility for ePay. And that should come out the last quarter of the year. In the meantime, you can still request payments through the portal.
Okay. My second question is this. We have quite a few consumers that are older consumers that we have no way of contacting. We've tried calling. Their numbers have been disconnected. And I think this has been brought up before. Now, I know that I would assume that the majority of consumers, when they move or if any of their personal information, PII information has changed, they're going to contact Social Security to notify them so that they can continue to receive their cash benefits. And with that being said, is there not a way that Social Security could provide to the ENs the ability to obtain that personal information in terms of contact?
No, Social Security cannot do that.
Okay. Mr. JD wanted to ask a question real quick.
Okay, I'm a partner. So
let me just say one thing. If there are ticket holders that you have not worked with in a long time and you're not able to get a hold of them, then really the best thing to do is unassign those tickets. And if a ticket holder is older, I don't know what your definition of older is, but after a certain age, the ticket terminates anyway. So.
Well, what I think by older mean older clients, like tickets that we may have had for 4 or 5 years.
Oh,
but
okay.
During the process of working with a lot of ticket holders, lots of time that we do may try to make contact with them, but however, we cannot force them to give their PII information, such as their change of address, their change of phone number. A lot of consumers that we deal with, a lot of times, because they are afraid they're going to lose their benefits, they're afraid to let us know what their address is or what if they have any changes in their employment. So, you know, we are on the back end having to try to some kind of way identify some way to get in touch with these consumers, and it's difficult, and we don't have those capabilities of being able to contact those consumers. So that's why we were asking that question. You know, what happens when you have a consumer that you have worked with, you have submitted pay stubs for, and all of a sudden, you know, they disappear because they change their address and so forth.
Okay, John. I definitely understand. And what we'll do, John, is just hopefully we were able to answer the questions that you have, but we definitely understand your concerns. But what I would like to do, because we are a little past the top of the hour, but I will like to take just a couple more questions. So I think what we'll do is, John, let's take one question from the chat, and then we'll take one last question on the phone.
All right. So our next question comes from Aaron, who asks, can proof of relationship be phone, email, or text contact with an individual, or must it be face-to-face only?
It does not need to be face-to-face. It can be phone, email, text.
Just make sure, this is Kimberly, just make sure, so the method of contact, as was just stated, could be phone, text, or email, but when you're providing your certification of services, you would need to be detailed in what was discussed via phone, mail, or text. Like what would not be acceptable is just to say March 12, 2018, call beneficiary, April 12, 2018, sent email to beneficiary. So providing the method of contact is needed along with the date and a description of the services. Okay. And now, Evan, we will take one call from the phone.
Next question comes from Robert Perkins. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everybody. Hello?
Hi, we're here.
Good afternoon, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. My question is about the new policy. It's more likely that our intensive services happen within the first 90 days, and then they get placed. I'm finding it hard over the last 7 to 8 months to kind of prove the monthly contacts because of the training that the EPAY gave us was, hey, if you can't contact them, there's this fallback system later each quarter that we'll see if there's any earnings. So kind of we transitioned from August, but anything before August is hard to kind of go back and get those month-to-months and get the service calls and the service contacts that we needed to satisfy what you guys were looking for in the COS.
Okay, so let me just be clear. So make sure I understand. So prior to August 1st, like you were saying, you weren't necessarily able to reach out to your beneficiaries, or you were doing it quarterly. So you didn't have that monthly.
Yeah, we were doing it. Right. Because if they were working, we're doing it every 90 days. And sometimes they kind of stay low after they start working anyway. Or we've had some individuals that work part-time, and then they went to a full-time schedule based on the seasons, and they didn't necessarily let us know that they were working more hours because they were sending us, you know, $100 paychecks, $200 paychecks. And we normally tell them to report that every quarter, but if they stop, then is now we're going back to try to collect 6 months of pay stubs, and some are missing for whatever reason. So we're having a challenge trying to kind of meet the satisfy the new quota. So how do we kind of deal with that?
Well, I think at the point, of course, is each case is treated differently, but from the time of ticket assignment until, you know, your requested claim month, and if you're unable to get the pay stubs, then you would just have to really look at your case notes, look at the information note on the form, the quarterly contact that was made, again, and any services that you may have provided. So if you were unable to contact your beneficiaries, period, then of course that I agree you're not going to be able to provide proof of relationship. So it's kind of we're not in a position where, you know, we're going to say, okay, well, you used to do it that way and now there's, you know, the requirement, so don't worry about it. Because again, the understanding was that when you assign a ticket that you are providing those services to the beneficiary. So the one thing I would just suggest is again, look at your case notes, look at the information that the services that you've provided since the ticket has, since you've assigned a ticket, and send that information in. But if you've lost contact with your beneficiaries, if you're not able to contact them, then there's always the option to unassign the ticket. But if you cannot, I still go back to the new rule, if you're not able to provide proof of relationship, then yes, the ticket will be unassigned.
Gotcha. Now, are split payments still available?
There are, right. Yeah, there are cases where it's possible. I'm sorry?
Yeah, I was asking because I've had a client working 9 months and they abruptly went to another employment network. So I'm trying to see, you know, what's the resolve there? Because I don't see anything on the website to kind of request split payments. Is that something that we reach out to the program manager?
Well, no. What you would do, again, is you just would submit your payment request through the portal.
Okay.
Make sure you include all the requirements for that payment. And once we receive the payment, if there is a possibility of a split payment, the case will be processed accordingly. And you will be notified if, again, if there is a possibility of a split payment, but they are still out there. But it is, you know, we wouldn't be able to determine that until you actually submit for request.
This is Kara from Social Security. If it's a split payment, but not even just split payment, but if a beneficiary unassigns the ticket, in order for you to get a split payment or a whole payment, you have to request that payment. And also then the ticket program manager will request a cost from you for that payment and determine how many more payments, up to 12 within 18 months after ticket unassignment, that you'll be eligible for.
Okay.
Okay,
thank you.
So, okay, you're welcome, sir. Hope that answered your question. Okay, so my clock, we have 4:13, so what we want to do is we're going to go ahead and end the call now, but I want to just make sure that everyone knows that please continue to submit your questions, and we will make sure, submitted questions, we'll compile all the questions from the chat, and we will make sure that we post, again, some frequently asked questions to make sure that we're addressing all of your questions. Please make sure you're using the TPM resources, you know, contacting the EN Payments Help Desk if you have payment-related questions. If you have any systems issues, contact our systems help desk. But, again, I understand that we only have a certain amount of time to present and to answer the questions, but we don't want any of your questions to go unanswered. So please make sure to contact the help desk if you should have any questions. We will continue to try to provide information to the providers. And when it comes to submitting for payment, please just make sure this is the new policy effective August 1st. So please just make sure that when you are requesting a Phase 1 Milestone 1 payment and you do not have pay stubs as your primary evidence of earnings, that you are submitting certification of services as proof of relationship. We will continue to process your cases in detail, and we do have, if your case is denied, we will have, you know, you'll be able to see that denial reason. If you have questions, contact the help desk. We will continue to outreach if your certification of services does not have the information needed to process the claim. So we want to give you the opportunity to provide that proof of relationship. But again, I just want to thank you all for joining today's call, and we look forward to speaking with you on the next quarterly call, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect.